Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Thunder Buddies podcast. I'm Eric Horn. I'm here in studio with Jenny Carlson. Jenny.
Woohoo!
Big woohoo from Jenny. Brett, can we get a woohoo from Orlando?
Woohoo!
You that sound was, excited.
That was not that very was my, good. That was
my, it's too hot to be woohooing.
That was kind it's of like hot. the humidity draped woohoo had to be more subdued.
Yeah. Slathered in humidity.
Slathered.
Like it's a barbecued rib. Brett, I don't blame you for not being enthusiastic about your woohoo. Orlando's not one of my favorite places in the world. The last time I went there, it was scorching hot too, so I don't blame you.
It is hot. I walked about five blocks, maybe. I'm out in the suburbs, so I can't really count blocks, but I walked a little ways to get lunch, and it's just hot. It's too hot.
Sorry, dude.
Sorry, ma'am.
It's all right. You know, it's better than tornadoes or whatever. Are you having tornadoes?
Not yet.
Okay. It's gloomy.
I've lived in this state for 18 years forecast. I think it's a little too chilly and overcast for thunderstorms to really be bad here. It has to be hotter, more humid, and sunny to boil up the storms.
Meteorologist Jenny Carlson.
I've lived in the state for like 6 months now.
Right.
This is going to be my first like tornado season. And like I'm getting Orlando. This is it for me. This is my last road trip. I come back and I'm just stuck in the land of tornadoes. Eric's going to go on the road next month and I'm going to be sitting there. So I'm nervous.
It's, you know what though? Here's the deal, Brett. I'm going to tell you straight out. The deal with thunderstorms and bad storms in this state, they are able to tell you where they are with accuracy that is unmatched anywhere else. And when I say they, I mean the meteorologists, whether you're talking about National Weather Service, TV, whatever. They've got more toys to figure out where stuff is than anywhere else. I am flabbergasted by the amount of like pinpoint accuracy that these guys have at their fingertips. It's unbelievable.
Brett, didn't you like get Gary England on the phone or something?
I did.
See, y'all are homies now. Just call him.
Yeah. What was that for? I had to call around all over the place to find Gary England. Oh, that was for Hall of Fame, I think.
That's right.
It was Kevin Durant coming back. I called some other Oklahoma Hall of Famers to talk about Oklahoma Hall of Famer Kevin Durant.
Just start texting Gary England and ask him about the weather whenever you're worried. See what he says.
We have managed to bring up Kevin Durant on a podcast that would have nothing otherwise to do with him. We find a way.
So this will probably be the last mention.
Can we blame him for the bad weather? Seems legit.
Feels like somebody's probably blaming him somewhere. I can feel it. Why don't we talk about Russell Westbrook instead? I mean, you know, I'm sure everybody wants to kind of hear us talk about that guy and you know, his chances at winning the MVP, his chances at the triple-double. Let's start with the triple-doubles. You know, we've got 9 games to go. You know, he needs 5 to pass Oscar Robertson's 41 for the season. He needs 4 to tie. I got a lot of questions on my chat today about, you know, is there a chance he can tie at home or he could pass Oscar at home? You know, the way that the schedule's laying out, he's gonna have to basically get 4 in a row to tie Oscar at home. I mean, he's on a 3 in a row streak, right, Brett? I think he's on 3 in a row. Am I mistaken? My triple double numbers get a little bit jumbled at this point in time.
It's at least 2 in a row. Let's put it that way. Because he's done it both times on this road trip. Did he do it the game before this?
He did, because it was Philly. He did it That's against right. Philly, mm-hmm. and he's done it twice on the road trip. Yeah, he loves Philly. And so that's 3 in a row. That would be, if he were to tie it at home before they go on their last road trip of the season, that would be 7 triple-doubles in a row, which he's actually done this season, I think.
I was going to say, that's his long streak this year, right?
Possible.
7 is the number.
Yeah. No, it's not out of the realm of possibility. But, which you'll be writing about sometime this week, there is a caveat to that in that...
Well, he plays against the Spurs this week, who's only got 1, and he got it this year. Regular season only. We're only talking about regular season. And then he plays Charlotte, who he has never gotten 1 against. He's made a habit this year of getting them against teams he has not gotten them against, but he has never gotten 1 against Charlotte.
The first time they went to Charlotte, they played horrible. I was at that game. That was not a great game. Ton of fouls against the Thunder in that game. I think Charlotte went to the line like 39 times, something like that.
He chucked the ball to referee.
That was the ball chucking game. He totally hit a referee in the head that game, and then that's when Russell and started his 2-month tour of shaming me in the media, or just not answering my questions. But I feel like at home, it's a different story. They get Charlotte at home. I feel like he can do that on a Sunday. The Spurs are a different question because you just don't know who the Spurs are going to play. They could come out here and play Kawhi. They can come out here and, you know, play the B squad with that really pale Burton's guy and whoever else they send out there, Brent Forbes or something. So it's not out of the realm of possibility because in this crazy season of Westbrook, anything has been possible. But seven triple doubles in a row.
For the second time
this season. For him to tie outrageous. At home. I feel like the tie is more likely to come on this last road trip of the season. And he might even break it on the last road trip of the season because he's going to be playing some teams. You know, he's going to be playing Minnesota, Phoenix. He's going to be mad when he goes back to Phoenix because the last time they played Phoenix, they played terrible. Minnesota, Denver. Denver gives up a ton of points, ton of possessions. So,
I think Denver's one of the teams he has three or four against in his career. I did this chart because when they were down to 12 games, he had 29 against those last 11 teams. It's 12 games that they played Denver twice. So he had 29 career triple-doubles against those teams. He has four against Orlando. Orlando's one of the – he had four against Houston going into that game. He's now got five.
He's got five against Houston now.
Yeah, so he had two against Dallas. He now has three. He's got four against Orlando, who they play here tomorrow. And then going down the road, he's got two against Milwaukee, two against Memphis. Phoenix and Denver are the big ones. He's got three against each of those teams. And Minnesota, who they're going to play also at the end, he's got four against them. So he's had career success getting triple-doubles against a bunch of teams that they have coming up.
He's got two against Denver and two against Phoenix this season already. Like,
yeah,
the odds of him getting a triple-double against those teams is probably going to happen. So I'd say if he's going to, like, break or tie the record, if he doesn't do it in this home stretch coming up, he'll probably do it against Denver or Phoenix because those teams give up a ton of points, young teams. He likes beating up on Denver and those young guards and then Phoenix too. It's just a matter of, you know, the big question of is the Thunder actually going to win the game? Because the last time they went on the road in Phoenix, they played pretty poorly. Which brings us to the Russell Westbrook show we just saw in Dallas last night. You know, he being so brilliant in that game, I don't think it overshadows some of the issues they had, but it definitely, like, kind of puts it to the side to where we can appreciate how good Westbrook was down the stretch. But I almost felt like I'd be a jerk if I went on Twitter last night and the first thing I said was, hey, Russell Westbrook did good to overshadow how poorly the Thunder played for, you know, basically 35, 40 minutes of the game. They had a little spurt coming out of third quarter where they played really good defense, and then they got out to quick run to close down that double-digit lead that Dallas had. And then Westbrook had his 12 of 14 down the stretch to close out Dallas. But, I mean, Brett, you were there. That really wasn't an inspired Thunder performance.
No, they played really well coming out. They played well, like, right at the very beginning. And then they got a little lead. Then it was back and forth for a while. And then Dallas just sort of took over at the end of the first quarter. And then all through the second, that was a long run where Dallas scored pretty easily, and the Thunder just could not get anything going offensively. That might have been 14-0 at one point, Dallas. I don't remember what their run was between the end of the first and into the kind of the middle of the second. The Thunder shot 20% in the second quarter. They scored 10 points. They were awful in the second quarter. But you know what? I think the big thing was obviously Westbrook was great. He was amazing down the stretch. They got a little bit it was hustle-driven luck, but they got some luck here and there. The playoff off of Barea was a great play, but it's just a fortunate tip that they get that ball back. But they played good defense on the stretch. That was the thing. Dallas didn't score a lot, but Dallas doesn't score a lot. I mean, they're not a good team. Rick Carlisle said before the game they weren't a good team. Somebody asked him why they were so much better at home, and he said bad teams are better at home. They're not very good, and they're not very good offensively, and the Thunder, you know, sort of made them look like a bad offensive team down the stretch by playing some defense, being really committed to defense, which they haven't been as much lately. This is, since the trade, they're not as good a defensive lineup, but they kind of buckled down there down the stretch, and that's the combination that works for them. Play really good defense and then let Westbrook go be Westbrook.
That seemed to have been the theme for a lot of these games this season, particularly the ones they went in the clutch. You know, Westbrook takes over at the end. They pull together and get stops. I think of the Utah game at home that they won the first time they beat Utah at home. This game on yesterday against Dallas, actually the Utah game on the road where Westbrook hit a game winner too, the defense came together in the last stretches of the game when they had a terrible third quarter. That's when the Thunder were going through their third quarter problems.
The game they beat Houston at home was kind of that way. Houston couldn't make a shot down the stretch.
Yeah, and Westbrook finished it off with that dunk.
Yep.
You know, you mentioned the Thunder since the break, their offense being actually really well is what you tell me just looking at the numbers, and their defense kind of taking a step back. I mean, what do you see there in terms of, like, what the numbers are showing you since the All-Star break and since the trade?
Yeah, I mean, some of that is probably just that, like, Oladipo has played great for the most part. He's been not as consistently great lately, but, I mean, he was never going to be as great as he was. He shot 70% from three for, like, a long stretch, like five games maybe, right when he came back. And so some of that is that. He just played great. They were just a really good – you know, they already have Westbrook as such a great offensive player. They get a second guy really clicking. Taj Gibson kind of, you know, has found his spots on the floor. Westbrook has gotten really adept at getting him the ball in spots where he scores. So I think that's been part of it. I think they've got a little bit better lineups now and a little bit more. Taj is more of an offensive threat than Domantas Sabonis was, since about December. And so that's been part of the difference. But they aren't as good defensively. Some of that is probably some lineup combinations. You look at, you know, a guy like Jeremy Grant, who they play basically for his defense, has kind of seen his minutes decline since the trade because of some rotation situations. You look at, like, Doug McDermott, and they play Alex Abrines. Sometimes those two guys play together. That's not a great defensive lineup. So they've done some things that really do bolster their offense, but I think defense has suffered a little bit. And I think that's interesting because they are a team that has sort of built this identity around defense. So what does that mean for them going forward if what it turns out is that they're a much better offensive team but their defense has kind of taken a step back?
It was nice to actually see them – you know, have some clear improvements in terms of their defensive focus from the Houston game to the Dallas game. Jenny, I don't know if you saw any of the Houston game, but probably the worst defensive effort of the season in terms of guys, you know, rotating over, guys keeping guys in front of them on the perimeter. It just didn't seem like anybody on the Thunder was, you know, this cliche term that coaches like to use, connected, that on a string, so to speak. When one guy gave up his assignment or got blown by, nobody was there to slide over. The rotations were late. They were late getting out to shooters. And you can't do that against teams like Houston. And I saw improvement in the Dallas game, but still not enough to where the Thunder needs to be a consistent team or even get out of like a first-round playoff series.
Yeah, the defense, I mean, it has had its struggles. There's zero doubt about that. I mean, even what they have, that five-game winning streak right before the Warriors game, you know, I think they gave up over 92, over 95 in every game. And I think in three of those, it was over 100, even well over 100 in a couple instances. Now, they won those games, which said to me that the margin for error was increased. You know, we've all talked about that from time to time. You know, when you – I hate to bring up that name that we talked about at the beginning, Kevin Durant, but when you had Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook in the lineup, your margin for error was so much bigger. You know, if you didn't play good defense for a quarter, you didn't, you know, lock down, you know, on a possession or two or 10, well, you know, those two guys would figure something out late and give you a chance. But obviously that changes when you've only got Westbrook on the floor. Now, that's a big only. A lot of teams would love to have only Russell Westbrook as their superstar this year. But, you know, I think that, you know, as you're we've definitely seen some evidence, both by the numbers and if you just watch games, that, you know, the defense isn't as good. And so maybe this is a question of, you know, these new lineups, new guys sort of trying to find their way offensively and maybe not being as locked in defensively. I think that, you know, defense, although teams do different things philosophically in the NBA, it's largely the same. I mean, guys are playing the same sort of principles everywhere. And, you know, this is how we defend the pick and roll. This is how we defend, you know, three-point shooters, whatever. That's largely the same from team to team. So I have to think part of it could potentially be guys sort of figuring out their way offensively, and that becomes – where a lot of your mental and physical energy goes, and then it kind of wanes on the defensive end. But, if they want to get very far in the playoffs, they got to transition back to playing better defense. I mean, I just don't think you can rely on the offense to carry you in all that many playoff series. Maybe a first round series, depending on the matchup. But even at that, I just find it hard to believe that they're not going to be able to play good defense and survive very long.
And you know, the defensive inconsistencies play into what Rick Carlisle was telling you guys down there, Brett. You know, like, and not that the Thunder's a bad team, but I certainly wouldn't call them an elite team. I'd say they're probably closer to mediocre than they are elite. They're a good team, but they're slightly above average to me. You know, the net ratings show it. They're like a 0.07 or like a 0.08 in terms of net rating. They're not that much in the positive. So
negative 0.01 as of today, actually.
Oh.
They have a negative net rating, just barely. They're basically even. I mean, 0.01.
Exactly.
They're basically even, but they've got the best record of anybody who's even or worse. By a pretty good margin. I mean, they've got a really good record for a team that you know, per 100 possessions is getting outscored.
Wow. Well, that's the Westbrook factor right there, friends.
Yeah.
It's close games. I mean, that's the thing. They've been really good in close games. And that's the most like simple math you can do, but that's what it tells you is that if you're barely being outscored, if you're basically a net, you know, push, if you're basically a net zero, you're winning all your close games. And that's what they've done a lot of.
Yeah.
Brett, as much as the talk was around Harden and, you know, a lot of their guys on the Rockets kind of subtly throwing shade at the idea of Westbrook as the MVP, pumping Harden as the MVP after that performance on Sunday, how much did you hear in Dallas on Monday after Westbrook did what he did in the closing stretches of the fourth quarter?
You know, it's interesting because I think it's obviously they're promoting Westbrook. You've got they're doing those videos where Enes Kanter and Steven Adams talk about it. But nobody said, like, he's the MVP after he made that shot. They just said this is what Russell does. And some of the sense I get is that Westbrook doesn't want a whole lot of that. Like, I don't think Westbrook wants Sam Presti going out and tweeting a bunch of stuff about James Harden, you know, like little subtle shots at James Harden. I don't think he wants that happening, which is what happens a little bit with Houston. I don't think he wants that kind of push. Now, you know, these guys have grown kind of accustomed to it. It's kind of funny. It was one of the questions I asked Billy Donovan. Is like, does he still have the ability to amaze you? Because Donovan was so cool about it. Like, oh, you know, then Russell scored 12 of the last 14 points and we won the game. Like it's just like it was nothing. Like, it's just no thing. Like, I mean, you know, he didn't have to scrap a whole story and rewrite it. So he was probably less amazed than I was.
Yeah.
But like, they didn't do that. They didn't really seize on it as this opportunity to talk up the MVP. Which Houston very much did. I mean, Mike D'Antoni was like, hey, we're 3-1 against these guys. You figure it out, you know, as sort of a head-to-head kind of thing between the two guys. So you didn't see a whole lot of that. That's not – I just don't know if that's – and maybe that's a product of not being asked because, like, after that Harden game, I think everybody was asking the Rockets about that. Last night what we were asking about was not, is this guy the MVP, but, like, can you believe this guy just keeps doing this?
I'm surprised, frankly, more people weren't asking about, hey – how are you going to fix this team playing crappy on the road, man?
He just erased all those questions, you know?
Yeah, like he did.
Because it's so hard to focus on anything that happened in the rest of the game when what happened in the last 3.5 minutes was so spectacular.
And that's – I read this. I was actually looking for this stat while you guys were talking a second ago, and I can't find it. But somebody tweeted this morning, I think it was a TV guy, probably from Dallas, that teams trailing by is at 12-plus and 4-minute mark to go in the game. Like 13 times the team that was trailing has won that game in the last 20 years.
I have that stat, and I don't know, like, again, it was a TV guy, and I don't know exactly who he is, but the record, it's 13 or more under 4 minutes over the past 20 years. And what he said the record was is 12 wins – 10,920 losses.
Well, when you think about all the blowout games, I mean, and that isn't even blowout. 12, you know, being down 12 with 4 minutes to go is kind of like, well, that happens pretty regularly. So I could see where that would just, you know, a lot of games would just kind of come to the end and the team up is the team that wins, you know? But so, yeah, I'm with you, Brett. I don't know. I'd have to look a little deeper into the source, but it's, I mean, like, that doesn't sort of strike me as, I mean, it may be a little bit off, but even if it is, it's still not that far off.
If somebody wants to add those up, they can go ahead and do that.
Yeah, go ahead and while you're listening to this podcast, go ahead and break out your computer and do it. We'll wait. No, we won't. Go ahead.
It was ridiculous. And you know, I was actually leaving my house to go to a friend's house last night when I was watching the game.
You were bugging out.
During that
you
fourth
gave
quarter.
Up.
Well, this is the
you
thing.
Didn't care.
I didn't necessarily give up. I was listening to it on the radio and I was like, "Okay, this is going to be tough." For them to come back from this. And I think they got it to within like 8 or something. And then when I got to my destination, I didn't have the internet, but I had it. I think I had my internet crapped out on me on my phone when it was like 91 to 90 Dallas.
Okay.
And I was like, man. And it said 22nd timeout Dallas. And I kept trying to refresh it. And then like I tried to like get on like the iHeartRadio so I could like listen to it on a radio, and I like tried to go on Twitter and like nothing was working on my phone, and like I couldn't pick up a signal or whatever, and I was just like, of course they're gonna somehow Westbrook's gonna hit like a game winner or something like that, and I'm not gonna see this thing.
You've covered this team for a while, haven't you?
I was like they got it this far, they have an opportunity. I don't know who has the ball right now because it still says Dallas 22nd timeout, but by the time I get my internet back, all I see is people just all caps, Russell Westbrook. And I'm just like, this mofo did it again, man. Like, and then I go see the replay and I'm just like, well.
You know what,
there
though?
There you go.
So, here's so some, two, go ahead, Brad.
Two things about that. One, shout out to my buddy Alex, who's like a hardcore podcast listener, who had like the second best fan experience you can have. The best is like suffering through that and getting that release at the end, like your guy hits the game winner. He had the second best one, which was go to bed disgusted and wake up and find out they won, which is like, it's a pretty good feeling, I think, for a fan. So kudos to him for that. The other thing is like, you know, you talk about him, you said he's going to make a shot like that. After he missed that 19-footer and then the ball goes out of bounds, I was like, well, he's going to hit a shot here. Like, there's no question once they got the ball back. And so I asked him about missing that first one. And he said, you know, like when you ask Russell Westbrook the question about missing the first one, what you really want him to say is exactly what he said, which was he told Billy Donovan, I'm not going to miss another one. And I think everybody, that's kind of what everybody thought. I think even Dallas's bench was like, oh, God, don't give him another chance.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, one of my favorite things about that shot that won the game last night, you know, obviously Thunder fans are going to say their favorite part was that it went in. But my favorite part was the fact that Russell Westbrook, for a long time, and it'll probably happen again. He's probably not done with it, but at least last night, so many times we've seen game-winning situations where three wasn't necessary, and he'd shoot the three. That and that shot he hit last night, while it wasn't his money shot at the elbow, like we've seen him hit so many times in games, it was in that sweet spot. It was close enough where you knew he was so confident shooting it, and I loved that. I mean, he had Fender on skates. I mean, he knew that he had to hang with him, and he couldn't do it because of the skills that Russell Westbrook has. And so for Westbrook to seize on that opportunity to shoot that shot that is so comfortable and so much in his wheelhouse, to have that be the game winner, I just thought that was – I thought that was awesome. I thought that was a sign of maturity, of evolution, of, you know, remembering this is still a young guy. As high levels he's playing, he's still evolving. And I thought that was such a great moment right there. And on that, I got to leave. Brett, I'm sorry. We didn't even mention it to you before. I've got an appointment. But you guys, you don't need me.
Bail out Jenny.
What the heck? You don't need me. I'm
fine, Jenny.
We are graced though by your presence.
Well,
fine, Jenny.
We are diminished by your departure.
That's so nice. But I'll listen to the rest of this when it posts. Thanks, guys.
Bye, Jenny.
See you, Jenny.
Jenny's right. I love when Westbrook doesn't pull the three. I think since that James Harden, I've written about this, since that Harden game in Houston, I guess it was in January. You know, when he's had an opportunity to hit those game-winning shots, he's taken the one in Utah mid-range. He's taken this one mid-range. He hasn't pulled up for the three. And though his three-point percentage has been better this year than it has in previous years, he's around, I guess, 33-ish percent. That mid-range shot is his. He can hit that, and he can elevate over anybody when he wants to get it. And he took it well last night. And
yeah, the one he missed was a little bit further out than what you sort of consider his money shot. You know, it was kind of, it was a little bit of that angle, that right angle. It was like, not exactly what you would say is his shot, but like Jenny said, I mean, 16 feet, you're like, oh, he'll hit this. Like when he rose up, I had no, it was like, I started writing it at that point. Like, yeah, this is going in.
Look at you all clairvoyant and whatnot. All believing in Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, he just wasn't going to do it again. I mean, like when he missed the first one, that was one thing, but I just thought like, there's no way. There's no way he's going to miss this one. Too good a shot.
Yep. Yeah, it was a good one. You know, it really saves the Thunder from two would have been crummy losses on the road going into Orlando. They have not played well against Dallas this year. So to get that win, it's crazy to say against a team like Dallas that that's a big win, but you know, with the way that they were playing that game and just how inconsistent they've been defensively over the past two or three days, that was a big win. That was a monster win for them to escape.
And like let's not forget they got smoked the last time they went there.
Yeah.
They played terribly in Dallas the last time.
Yeah.
And it looked like they were kind of headed that direction again. It looked like the same stuff. And this is the same stuff. I mean, it's like what you said, Westbrook sort of erases all that came before last night, but like it is still the same problem. It's Dirk at the five and Barnes at the four. It's what the Rockets do. They're different. Obviously, the Rockets are way better offensively. But it's that kind of stuff. It's that small ball stuff that gives them a ton of trouble. And they did some good things down the stretch last night, but that continues to be a real significant thing. That's like one of the things I'll be writing about in my story for tomorrow about their defense. That is a real issue, and it's an issue they got to figure out. And some of that is maybe Jeremy Grant seeing a little bit more time, which he did yesterday. They didn't play Sabonis at all. And some of it is maybe some other guys just have to be better. They just got to be a little bit better and a little bit more locked in, and they got to rotate faster. And you can't be what Doug McDermott was, not to call him out, against Houston. You know, like you can't have those situations like they had there where you're two steps late on rotations.
I'm curious as to what Norris Cole did to get buried so deep by Billy Donovan, because he is riding Samaje Christian right now. And I wouldn't necessarily say it's bad. You know, Christian had a pretty solid game against Philly, I think, or maybe it was against Golden State where he had about 10 points. But on the road, he hasn't been very good. He's not. We know he's not a great offensive player. But the extended minutes for him, particularly with Russell Westbrook, they don't look necessarily great. I understand what Donovan wants to do in terms of not turning the ball over and just basically like maintaining possessions, because Norris Cole is just not doing that for you. His turnover rate is incredibly high. But it's curious to me that he's extending Samaje Christian as much as he is, and I'm not going to blame him completely for the second unit struggles, because I think Enes Kanter hasn't been great in terms of, you know, turning the ball over in the post. You know, Doug McDermott's been a non-factor for a majority of the games he's played since he's come over in the trade. I don't know what Billy Donovan's doing exactly right now when it comes to that second unit, but it would be nice to get it fixed and flowing, you know, at least a week before going into the postseason.
Yeah, you know, it's weird because when they made that starting lineup change, he was sort of reluctant because he liked his starters so much. He thought that the starters with Sabonis played pretty well. As it turns out, they're way better with Taj Gibson. But doing that has messed up some stuff on the back end of that. So it's messed up some second unit stuff because it has made it hard to figure out what they're doing with Jeremy Grant. He said yesterday, I asked him about it. He said, yeah, it's a challenge sometimes just to figure out what you're doing, where you're going to use him, how you're going to use him. So that's a little bit messed up. Last night, again, they don't play Sabonis at all. The Christian thing is weird because he basically said, you know, I mean, he essentially said last night in Dallas that that's Samaje Christian's job now. I mean, because the way he put it was, there may be some situations down the road where Norris can help us, but Samaje's been really consistent, and that's been good for us. And so, like, they're getting what they want out of Samaje Christian. Whether it's what you want or I want, what fans want, is a whole other question. It clearly is not, based on what people say on Twitter. But, like, he's getting what he wants out of it, and so it seems to me like that's just going to be the situation as it stands right now, is that Norris Cole is not going to be in that rotation. So, you know, I get that they like his defense. He is, to me, Billy got asked about, you know, Samaje being kind of a reluctant shooter, and he said he didn't necessarily agree with that. I do agree with that. He is hesitant to shoot. Sometimes he doesn't even want to go to the rim, and he'd rather look to kick out. So It's an odd thing, but I mean, it's obviously something that he feels like they've hit on that works.
Well, he feels like they've hit on it because Samaje doesn't turn the ball over. And Norris Cole just turns the ball over too much. Any defense people. And Norris Cole turns the ball over too much. He's too careless. Yeah. And even when it's not a turnover, it's an errant shot. It's a shot that might not, you know, go within the flow of the offense. And that's pretty much as good as a turnover in certain instances, you know.
And that's Norris. That's Norris Cole's career. I mean, like, that's everywhere he's been. Everywhere he's been, shot selection it's the question. I mean, that was the question in New Orleans. He's not a bad player by any stretch, and he can get hot. And he can get you a bunch of points off the bench. It's just, that's what he does. I mean, he has great value in that sense. But the downside of him is he's going to turn the ball over some, and he's going to take some questionable shots. It's just like, that's just who he is. That's the trade-off of getting a guy who can be really good offensively.
That's
not really Billy Donovan's kind of trade-off.
No. He's going to go with the defense. He's going to go with the guy who's not turned the ball over because, you know, he's already got a ton of turnovers when it comes to Russell Westbrook, and then Russell Westbrook has the ability to make up for those turnovers.
They're not great offensively. I mean, like, their numbers are way better since the trade. They're a better offensive team, but they're not a team that can just give away possessions.
No. You know, what I'd like to see is, you know, getting Enes Kanter into more advantageous positions. I think he's really struggling in a little bit with his offense and passing out of that double and playing a little bit quicker within the offense. I thought that he and Cameron Payne had gotten to a point to where they were on a pretty good rapport in terms of Cameron Payne feeding that ball into the left post. And, you know, that's something I think they need to get back to working on again with Kanter. The Taj Gibson pick and pop with Russell Westbrook was a good weapon that was working for a while, and that seems to have kind of dissipated in the past few games. So, to me, I think they just need to get back to kind of like settling down and getting back to what worked for them offensively during, you know, the stretch out of the All-Star break where they were scoring at a higher rate and playing a little bit better on offense.
I think one of the other things, you know, when you talk about Kanter, and I've noticed that some with Kanter too, one of the things is like they've got a situation where you've got Alex Abrines parked on that side of the floor a lot, and so Kanter gets the ball, and if the double comes, he throws to Abrines. If the double doesn't come, he goes and scores. And Abrines is just not shooting the ball well. That's part of the thing, too. I mean, Abrines just hasn't made threes lately.
Yeah, I think he's like 30% from three in his past few games, but he hasn't been great either. It's gonna be odd, and it's gonna be interesting to see how they are going into the playoffs because, you know, they're still in a fight for positioning. I think they're maybe a game and a half out of like the four or two games out of the four. They're still within reach of the four seed. Do they want the four seed? I'm not even sure. Do they want the five seed? I'm not sure because that means you got to go play Golden State in the second round. But they're probably not worried about the second round right now anyway. They're probably just worried about trying to, you know, play their best basketball going into the postseason. That's really what they need to be worried about because, frankly, they're going to be an underdog in a first-round series probably regardless of who they play because if they do happen to get to the five and they got to go on the road, they're going to be the underdog because they haven't been a very good road team this year.
Now, if the Clippers fall to the six and you're in the and you could get to the four, if they get to the four and they're in a 4-5 with Utah, they might be favored to win that series. That might be the scenario in which they'd be a first-round favorite.
I don't know if they'd necessarily be favored if they get to the five. I mean, if they get to the four. Okay, the four. Yeah, the four.
I'm saying just the four, not Utah. Not Utah is the four and them is the five. I think if they could get to the four, Utah is the five, Clippers are the six. If they're in a 4-5 where they have home court advantage against that Utah team, I think they would be favored to win that series. But that's about the only scenario I could see where that's the case.
They're 2.5 back of Utah, and they've got the season series 3-1. It's not impossible with 9 games to go, but I don't know if Utah is going to give up 2.5 in the next however many games they have left. The Clippers are more realistic. They're only a game back of the Clippers, and they split the season series.
And the Clippers are just not playing great.
Yeah. Now, I think the next tiebreaker would be a conference record when it comes to them and the Clippers. And the Clippers, in terms of conference record, let me see here. Golly, that's close, too. The Clippers are 25-21. The Thunder is 26-20. So there's really only a game between them in terms of conference record, too. I kind of wish the Thunder and the Clippers would play a series. I think that would be. I think the Thunder would beat the. I think the Thunder would be favored in a series against the Clippers more so than they would against the Jazz.
Interesting.
I don't know if I'm necessarily right. If it was home court, the Thunder. Yeah, Thunder is a road team. They're just not going to be favored because they're just not.
They're a hard team to pick. They're a hard team to pick to win a series where they don't have home court. I think they have a chance against both those teams. I don't think they have a chance against Houston, frankly, in a seven-game series if they don't have home court. I mean, obviously they're not going to get home court. I'm not saying that's a possibility. I'm saying if they're the six and Houston is the three, I think that's going to be really hard because they have a hard matchup there. Their defense and Houston's offense is not a great matchup. And I know they played them close, but Houston's a little different. Lou Williams is a really nice piece for them, and he is a guy who preys on some of the things they don't do very well, allows them to go even smaller, even more spread, and shoot three even better. That would be a tough one to pick them to win in. But anybody else, I think they've got a pretty good chance.
Of all the teams that are qualified for the playoffs right now, the Thunder has the third worst road record. I think the Pacers and the Heat are the only ones that are worse.
And those teams don't have records anywhere near what the Thunder has. The Thunder is such a good home team. That's the thing.
The Blazers, who are in eight seed right now, they're 16-23. The Thunder's 15-21. Granted, the Blazers have more games in hand there, but they have more road wins than the Thunder with a couple more games in hand. They're just not a good. And then they've got four. Well, they've actually got five road games to go. So there's no there's honestly no telling what could happen on these next five road games. I mean, I imagine they'll win in Orlando because Orlando's not a very good team. They haven't beaten anybody really good this month. I mean, I think they beat Toronto a couple of times in the beginning of the month, I think. But, you know, these last four road games, Memphis is going to be a big one. Phoenix, Denver, Minnesota. There's absolutely, like, no telling what's going to happen in those road games. There's absolutely no telling how they're going to play, what's going to happen.
None at all, because they're so inconsistent. And then they also play some teams who are kind of like, I mean, you don't know what you're going to get out of Denver on any given night. You really don't know Minnesota. This is Minnesota's time. They might rise up and play great. They did it last year. This is kind of what they do. You know, they get kind of hot after it matters. But Denver's a team that's, like, really up and down. And then the Thunder is so up and down. So, like, Phoenix is not a team you think should beat them, but they did it once. It's, you know, like, you just don't know what to expect out of them on the road, and then you're going to play some teams that you don't know really what to expect out of them at home.
And then you might get a false sense of security because you may play a team like Minnesota or Phoenix who's in tank mode. They might sit guys, and then the Thunder goes in there and beats them, and they might think, oh, well, you know, we played a good game. We held them to this many points. It's like, yeah, but Devin Booker didn't play. You know, they're trying to get a top three pick. They're trying to get a top five pick. Like, Cat didn't play. It's kind of a dangerous time for them in these next 2 weeks in terms of, like, playing teams that aren't playing for anything. You know, Memphis obviously is, and Denver is going to want to make the playoffs. So those two games are probably going to be competitive. And they've got Denver twice in the next 2 weeks, which is going to be big for Denver.
If Denver doesn't get passed by that last, you know, if Portland doesn't knock them out of it by then,
yeah,
particularly if it comes down to that last little bit. And we don't even know. I mean, we don't know what San Antonio will do either. We have no idea.
Exactly.
Because San Antonio might be getting pretty close to the point where it feels like this one thing isn't going to happen. So, you know, let's get ready to be the two.
Brett, who's your MVP today? I'm going to pull out the old Darnell Mayberry daily question of the day. Who's your MVP today?
So here's the thing, and I kind of wrote about this on Sunday. I feel like if you thought Russell Westbrook was the MVP, Sunday really didn't change your mind because it's still exactly the same narrative you thought. Houston's got this offensive juggernaut of a team in that Mike D'Antoni offense, and they got a bunch of guys who can do a bunch of stuff, and then Westbrook has to carry so much stuff. And maybe some of that is Westbrook's choosing. Maybe he's carrying when he could be distributing more. I don't know. It's hard to say. But to me, it's just so hard watching him night in and night out. It's still hard for me not to pick Westbrook. I watched him again last night, and I think I don't know that anybody in the league is better than that guy for what he's being asked to do.
Yeah. I'd have to agree. I'd go Westbrook. And, you know, the Houston game did nothing for me from the standpoint that they played them close three times this season. a couple of those games have come down to Westbrook decisions that if he would have taken maybe a different decision or chosen a different way, you know, the game could have tilted in the Thunder's favor. That doesn't really decide the MVP for me either. But for me, it comes down not even to the triple doubles, because he could. I think we had this conversation in the office a couple days ago. You know, if he's at 9.9 rebounds and 9.9 assists, that doesn't change the way I feel he's impacted the Thunder this season.
Right.
To me, it's more of what you saw last night against Dallas. It's what you saw on the road against Utah, against Boston. His ability to take a team that had been struggling for, you know, 95% of the game and elevate them when everybody in the building knows that he's the only guy that could possibly get the ball. And you said, you know, a lot of that might fall on him. It might fall on him, you know, being willing to make a pass here or you know, distribute in a situation where everybody's going to be keying on him. And he has done that at times. And
yeah,
at times other guys have been able to come through. I mean, he did it against Utah on the road. He passed off to Steven Adams on the break. They get a dunk to go up one. There have been times where he's bypassed that option. You know, he pulls up for a jumper against Harden in January in Houston. He's got Abrines and Oladipo open to his left. But if you look at the clutch numbers, his brilliance in those situations, in a role that was primarily occupied by Kevin Durant for the better part of 7-8 years, and now it's fallen solely on Westbrook, for him to be as statistically successful in those situations, I think speaks a lot to his MVP candidacy, more so than the triple doubles. You know, that's,
yeah,
that's historical, but and it does, you know, the Thunder does have a great record when he does triple double. I think they're like 30-7 this year or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the clutch situations and the ability to just make something out of nothing in these situations where the Thunder shouldn't have any business being in these games, that's remarkable to me.
With a team that's barely older than like Philadelphia on the average. I mean, you know, they have a super young roster. It's a, you know, among guys who play, I think it was Bobby Marks that put that out, among the rotation guys, they're like the second or third youngest team in the league among guys who actually get on the court. So, you know, he's doing a lot of stuff, and he's also having to deal with a lot of guys who in some situations don't know what they're doing, haven't been through these situations before. So he's carrying some things. Even guys who've been in the league a little while, like Oladipo's never been through this before. He's never had this experience where he's competing for a playoff berth, and you know, the games all matter at this stage of the season. By this point in Orlando, I mean, I'm not saying Victor Oladipo was taking games off, but I'm saying their games didn't matter. I mean, it, you know, you don't have anything to play for at this point.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what happens in Orlando. They got a funky team down there. You know, no Serge this time around.
Yeah, he was a bit of a factor the last time.
Yeah, a tad. You know, that was the site of last year's insane game where Victor Oladipo was actually playing for the Magic. And, you know, they win the two overtimes there. I think that was like the second game of the season last year, which was crazy. And Westbrook hits the half-court heave to send the game to overtime. So, again, I don't envy you being in Orlando, but I think it'll be a fun game regardless, because how can you not play better than you did the previous two games on the road? I can't imagine them playing much worse. Then again, you were on that 4-game road trip where it was probably the lowest of lows for the Thunder, so they probably could play worse.
Probably so. I mean, you know, they have played better on the road. Even, I mean, like last night, obviously they didn't play well. In long stretches, Houston, they were really bad. But before that, Brooklyn and Toronto, they were much better. I mean, I guess actually they've won 3 out of their last 4 on the road, which is, I mean, it's progress.
You know, I didn't think of it that way, because the road losses have been so staggering, mm-hmm, that they kind of overshadowed the Brooklyn and the Toronto games, in which they, you know, they played pretty well, especially that Toronto game, which was one of their best games of the year, just tremendous, mm-hmm, performance. But yeah, we'll see what happens, I guess. Steak Shack? Steak Shack for you?
Shake Shack, yeah. I did that today. That's what I did as soon as I got here.
Yeah.
Because I hadn't eaten all day. So I went there, and now I have to write.
Yeah, I'm going to let you go do that, because I know the deadline's coming up. Thanks, everybody, for joining us again. We will see you sometime next week, maybe even this weekend. We'll see what happens. You know, the triple-double is coming down to the stretch. Can he average? Probably, definitely. Can he pass? Probably, definitely. Didn't we talk about that a couple days ago?
The average is going to happen. It's almost unthinkable that he's not going to get the average now. He's really playing for the record at this point.
Probably, definitely. We'll see about that record, though, and we'll see when it happens. Thanks for joining us, and we will talk to you soon.